It helps the community hold together. So the Destiny community is reaffirming that it's united and is hoping to draw in other people through these gestures. If people can have a feeling that they're participating in something, it becomes community building.
Kia ora, I'm Davina Zimmer, and today on The Detail...
A rainbow storytime event in Rotorua has been cancelled after threats from Destiny Church's leader Brian Tamaki.
Well, another rainbow crossing has been painted over, this time on Auckland's Karangahape Road.
White paint was slathered across the crossing by three people in the middle of the night. K Road is known for its colourful community, and that community is furious at what's happened.
Well, a Labour MP wants to see Destiny Church members held to account for painting over a rainbow street crossing in Gisborne.
A protest by Destiny Church members failed to stop an appearance by drag queens at Gisborne Library today as part of the Rainbow Storytime Initiative.
But Hastings Council has now joined Rotorua in cancelling its Rainbow Storytime event, citing safety and disinformation concerns.
What's wrong with a rainbow? And when does a protest cross the line into a hate crime?
I think what it's about is the Tamaki vision of what the world ought to look like. And to some extent, I think he's looking back at a world that once was where people were, well, there was very little conversation about LGBT people. I think people knew that certainly gay men existed. They didn't approve of them. But they certainly thought that in public, it should not be spoken about. And certainly that was the world I was raised in. My parents were of the firm view that such things should not be talked about.
That's Peter Lynham, Professor Emeritus of History at Massey University. He spent years researching the religious history of Aotearoa, including Destiny Church, which he wrote a book about. So I asked him what was behind the recent attacks on the LGBTQA plus community icons.
Tamaki wants to gain a name of himself as the defender of the Christian New Zealand vision.
Protesting is a part of Aotearoa's identity. Over years, New Zealanders have congregated to protest against poverty, war, nuclear weapons, the loss of Māori land, and gender inequality. It's played a pretty important role in shaping the country to become what it is today. And Lynham has no problem with that.
And in some ways, the Tamaki protests are part of a rich heritage of a great variety of views being expressed, and probably we get far too concerned about this because these simple acts of protest are not actually going to change society. They simply raise issues and encourage debate. And so if we were more healthy about accepting variety of debate, I think we would see the Tamaki protests in perspective and not be so excited by them.
But the thing is, there is a section of our society worried about what our children are being exposed to. That section includes Destiny Church members, led by Bishop Brian Tamaki, who've been successful in getting several rainbow storytime sessions in public libraries cancelled.
I believe we had to protect the innocence of our children. And one way of doing that was challenging the councils in the library, what you're doing is not acceptable and it's inappropriate.
There is a little bit of unease in general society about, have we got this right yet? That there's alarm when a group comes in from the conservative side and protests it. And that's why there's been general community support for the anger at the way the Tamakis have painted over rainbow crossings and the like. My feeling is that we should join in the debate. You know, we shouldn't be frightened of the debate and we should let it be a debate. I don't think any of this comes close to actually breaching people's freedoms. It's really up to the libraries or the schools or the like to defend their right to make their own choices.
The painting over of the rainbow pedestrian crossings has been deemed by police as a hate crime. So what do you think of that term? Do you think it's a bit far?
I think it would be very difficult in fact, to demonstrate that it was a hate crime in criminal terms. That it was an unfriendly act, certainly. But one of the interesting things to me was when I looked at, especially in Grand Happy Road, at the sign, which may not, of course, have been painted out by Destiny. It may have been other people.
I didn't give any directive for that to be painted.
Is that actually it provoked a great deal of community resonance of joining together in support of LGBT people. So, I mean, I was fascinated that over the weekend, many, many people came up to me from a variety of backgrounds and were so positive about the attempt to protest Destiny. And I felt myself that that's the way it ought to be. There should be room for protest. And of course, if people want to paint up the signs, they need to pay the legal consequences of that. But I don't think we should be aiming to stop people making their complaints known if they're concerned about something. But we need to be able to respond to it in an appropriate, positive way.
You are part of, you know, the rainbow community. What would your message be to people of that community right now who might be feeling incredibly targeted and incredibly vulnerable?
Well, the first thing I certainly want to say to my LGBT comrades that, firstly, do not read the actions of Tamaki as the statements of a broader society. They're not. The broader society has moved and is essentially supportive of the rights and the protection of LGBT people. The very existence of these, nobody mandated that councils should paint pedestrian crossings in rainbow colours or do other symbolic things that made LGBT people feel welcome. So I'd firstly say to them, do not be frightened by this. Secondly, you're very welcome to protest back. And I think we should not hesitate to step forward and say, we can make an appropriate response to these things. But certainly, I feel that one of the great things about New Zealand society is the way it has embraced the support of the LGBT community. And I want to do everything to encourage that and to encourage LGBT people to feel safe because others will stand up for our rights.
Under New Zealand law, the right to protest rests on several specific rights and freedoms: freedom of association, freedom of peaceful assembly, and freedom of expression. As long as you remain within the guidelines, government organisations and the police should recognise and protect your right to protest. The recent events have been deemed to have broken these laws, some even classing them as hate crimes.
Police are treating the vandalism of a rainbow pedestrian crossing on Auckland's Karangahape Road early this morning as a hate crime.
Do you think that this is going to escalate further beyond just paint, I mean, not just, but painting pedestrian crossings?
Oh, I think it is just painting over pedestrian crossings because I don't think these are that significant in terms of the rights. If we saw any sense of the attempts to remove the freedoms of LGBT people to display who they are in society, then we would be fearful. We would think back to Nazi Germany and the way in which that turned into a very disturbing example of repression, and that LGBT were, along with the Jews, some of the immediate sufferers from the persecutions that were in the Nazi era. I actually am happy to say that I don't think it is remotely like that. And I do not see, in fact, the protest increasing because Tamaki has, if you like, tried something out and he's got a bit of publicity. But he's also had a bit of a warning that people are going to stand up for it. Now, Tamaki is not a fool. He doesn't like being in prison. That was very clear from the time that he was briefly in prison.
Destiny Church leader Brian Tamaki has confirmed that he has been charged with two offences following the anti-lockdown protest held in Auckland at the weekend. In a statement put out last night, Bishop Tamaki said he was surprised to be visited by two police officers and charged for his role in organising Saturday's rally.
This was not where he was comfortable. He couldn't do his social media from prison, for example. And so I think, in fact, that he'll find other issues and he'll keep reacting to issues as they come along. There's no political resonance at the moment. Destiny, once again, in the election, got essentially no votes. So there's no reason to think that this cause is going to grow.
It's an example of the power a small group of people can have on dominating a social narrative. And 2018 census figures tell us that the number of Destiny Church followers were around 5,000 or 6,000 people. But when the pandemic required people to isolate, the bans on mass gatherings included religious groups. Coupled with the powerful tool of social media, Brian Tamaki found a new way to connect his small community of people.
We should never assume that influence comes by being a large group. Mostly, influence comes by being a focused group. And, 5,000 people who are clearly set on supporting moves that are made, especially if they're strategic moves, can be quite significant. So that's the first aspect. The second aspect to bear in mind is that during COVID, Tamaki increasingly connected with a number of other minority groups in New Zealand who feel aggrieved at the state of society and for whom everything that the government did was alien to their values. And I can see in a number of the recent moves and in deliberate intention that he'll hold those people supportive. For example, he portrays himself as very opposed to the COVID injections, but there seems pretty strong evidence that he did have the first COVID injection. So, it's a contradictory position in some way.
So what is Destiny? And how did its leader, Brian Tamaki, come to be a household name?
Destiny Church began as a Māori breakaway from a Pentecostal denomination, from the apostolic denomination, which was a denomination that for various reasons had some strong links with Māori. When Brian Tamaki became pastor of the apostolic church in Rotorua in the 1990s, he increasingly led it in its own direction, and he became, disenchanted with general Pentecostal emphases. And so he broke away and created his own leadership. And then in 1999, launched his own church in Auckland under the Destiny label. And the Rotorua Church came with him in that split away. So that was the way in which it was shaped. So on outward appearance, it looks a bit like the average Pentecostal church with long music sessions led by bands, very loud and extensive preaching in Sunday services. But because it appealed mostly to Māori, there have always been these elements in which some of the Māori social and community aspects are highlighted. And there have always been, as there are in the Māori community, interesting links, surprising links in some ways, with various of the Māori political groups. And that still continues, where there's conversations with people in Kingitanga and with Ratana. They know each other. They may disagree, but they also know when to cooperate.
Brian Tamaki has justified these recent actions by saying it's not an attack on the rainbow community, but about looking after the innocence of our children.
The right thing to do to fight for our children's future. So we stood to shut down the drag queens in libraries that were bringing their kind of perversion on children.
I asked Peter what he thought of this justification.
Well, one has to disentangle this because Tamaki did try and make peace with the rainbow community back in 2019, where he held a special service where a number of us were invited along to see a supposed reconciliation. So we were all put up on stage, and it turned out we were going to be prayed for. And it wasn't the reconciliation probably that people were expecting. But then you see Tamaki does things in his own ways. Yes, I think actually, I'd give him this. I think he does have a notion that children should not be introduced to sexual diversity in their childhood, because he wouldn't really want them introduced to it at any time.
A man dressed up as a woman, for a start, is probably not a thing that most parents want their kids to be struggling with their whole identity agenda and the gender agenda that these guys carry.
And so his attitude is that he will play the heroic way of protecting the children. But on the other hand, you see, he also does it for the public attention that he'll get when he carries out one of these struggles or fights. He enjoys being seen as at odds with what he sees as the liberal conspiracy to take over New Zealand. So if they back down, he will find other ways to challenge it. And so from his point of view, the longer the debate continues, the better.
So in that sense, is the best thing that can be done is to just stay silent?
I don't think the LGBT community can possibly stay silent in such a circumstance, because these symbols like rainbow crossings, and there are various other, you know, rainbow symbols that have been introduced in various parts of towns, are there in order that rainbow people will feel as though they are accepted. You know, so many rainbow people face lots of occasions when they feel put down. I mean, the trans community at the moment especially suffers from this. And so these symbols become symbols of hope. And especially, you know, when we have higher levels of mental illness, and I think that really is an experience that people face when they're faced with opposition. So I think one has to oppose attempts to remove these symbols, which will be read very, very negatively by some of the most vulnerable people in our society.
I mean, one could argue that from a child's perspective, these rainbow story times are nothing more than someone dressed up reading them stories about dancing giraffes. I mean, how can people like Brian Tamaki justify that it's, you know, damaging the innocence of children?
Yes, it's interesting, because I've been listening to an interview online of a historian who's worked on the extent to which cross-dressing was common in Britain in its past history. And he looked over two centuries of cross-dressing and viewed the way in which it was, for most people, no big deal. And especially in Punch and Judy shows and the like, this was sort of part of the fun. And it wasn't given a huge significance. But what he noted, and I think this is important for us in New Zealand, is that from the 1970s, as the gay community becomes more apparent in society, previously innocent things were given a greater significance by a somewhat nervous general public. Now, the general public may have moved. Where I think the isolation of Tamaki's community means that it's holding to positions that perhaps 30 years ago became a central concern, that you were scared that children would so easily lose their innocence. And so that's the kind of focus that's coming about. I think clearly he believes that there is a conspiracy to make children turn trans. Fixity of gender is for him symbolic of the creation narrative of God creates the male and female. And he is convinced that the ways in which, as he sees it, little aspects of change in the ways in which children are made used to something will lead to a complete loss of clarity as to who the children are. So he sees it in very big, dramatic terms. The Destiny community is kind of reaffirming that it's united and is hoping to draw in other people through these gestures. So symbolic gestures, and that's all they are after all, symbolic gestures, if people can have a feeling that they're participating in something, it becomes community building. Now, the difficulty is that there is some on the edge of the Destiny community who will feel, I don't like that. That's not what I would want to do because I've got lesbian or gay members of my family, or I've got issues with my family who are struggling to come to terms with their gender identity. And each of Tamaki's gestures pulls in some people and pushes out some others. So it's about the borders or the margins of a community. And Tamaki predicts that this will have the effect symbolically of clarifying who Destiny is or what Destiny is. It may not work as well as he thinks, just because we do know that there's a significant number of children and youth who are grappling very intensely with these issues. I think it's inevitable long term that at least some Pentecostal churches will have to come to terms with this, because the Pentecostal formula of music and expressive and dance and loud exhortations, this is a formula that appeals strikingly to young people. But these same young people are wrestling with issues of gender identity. Somewhere along the line, some are going to find ways to put those two together, I think.
That's all for today. The Detail is supported by RNZ and New Zealand On Air. This episode was engineered by William Saunders and produced by Gwen McClure and Alexia Russell. Thanks to Peter Lynham. I'm Davina Zimmer. Mā te wa.